All right. The court calls United States v. Adams. Counsel for the appellant, please.
Chief Judge Baker, members of the court. My name is Captain Nick Larson. I, along with Major Aaron Lieberbrand, represent Specialist Adams, the appellant. May it please the court. The military judge and the Army Corps erred in determining that Specialist Adams' confession was corroborated. First, the military judge erred in determining that a larceny could be inferred from the essential facts, from the independent evidence. And second, the Army Corps erred by holding an erroneous view of the law as to the essential facts in the confession. And as to the military judge's decision, he makes clear on page 92 of the Joint Appendix that he relies on two facts and evidence. A gun is found in Specialist Adams' home, and there's a Walmart across the street from Microtel near Fort Drum, New York. No fact finder could reasonably find or reasonably infer that Specialist Adams stole cocaine from that evidence. And indeed, that's the test. And that's the threshold. There is sufficient independent evidence to corroborate an essential fact when a fact finder, ignoring the confession, can infer from the independent evidence alone that the crime articulated by the essential facts occurred.
Does the corroborating evidence have to corroborate all of the essential facts or just enough of the essential facts in order for us to be satisfied that that it corroborated the truth of the entire confession?
It's close, Your Honor. 304G lays out the rule that every essential fact must receive corroboration. So the first step for a judge, and as this court looked at in Yauman, is determining what facts in this confession are essential and how many. And in Yauman, the court found three. But the job then is to find enough independent evidence to corroborate each of those essential facts. And if at the end of the analysis there's not enough corroborating evidence to corroborate the essential fact, then the fact is excised from the confession, which is what the military judge did here.
I think there's a separate element to that question, though, which is that seems to answer it, that you just do a 304 test, but do we look to the purpose of the rule as well, which is to get to truthfulness, to be satisfied that the confession is truthful? I believe that was part of the question. Or do we just look at, let's figure out what the essential facts are and see if they align with corroborating evidence?
Your Honor, there's three parts to the judge's inquiry. The first is to determine what facts are essential. Then is to determine what evidence is independent of that confession that's admitted at trial. Then, in applying the rule, the judge must look at the independent evidence and from that infer that the very essential facts raised in the confession are true. Now, to say that a fact is true is also to say that a fact occurred. And it's what the judge didn't do here. Now, that test comes to us. It's provided by Smith, and his court cited to that in Melvin. And, of course, it's consistent with this court's application in Rounds and Cottrell and even Say.
I want to go back to that for a minute. I mean, obviously, the rule talks about corroborating the essential facts. So, I mean, that's a given. But in CA, it seemed like, or however you pronounce that case, it seems like the majority, while they cited that test, then they said, but the real issue is whether the facts justify the inference as to the truth of the confession. So that seems to be the larger issue that the Chief Judge was just referring to, that if there are enough facts that you can infer the truthfulness of the confession, that's it. We don't have to get into the nitty-gritty of counting all these essential facts. How do you read that?
Your Honor, my read of CA or say is the judge is still looking to what is the gravamen of the confession. In that case, that the accused was charged with stealing a roll. And that was, I think, the gravamen of what he was talking about. And so in that case, the independent evidence raised at trial is a body is found. It's found in the description or a location described by the appellant. It died as a result of foul play. And there's evidence at trial that the victim not only knew the appellant, but in fact was last seen with the appellant. And the body, of course, was found without a wall. Now, the one inferential leap the court took in that case is as follows. A man of that stature would normally carry a wallet. And because the body was found sans wallet, we can infer from that that the accused absconded with that wallet. And even that one inferential leap divided the court, as you recognize that, that such an inference would stretch the corroboration rule beyond its breaking point. And so too here. The judge notes the essential fact of this confession is that appellant stole cocaine. The independent evidence that he relies on that.
But can I just ask there, is it that he stole cocaine or that he stole something?
That he stole cocaine.
Not property. It has to be cocaine.
Yes, Your Honor. That's what he talks about in the confession. I believe the actual wording of the judge is appellant claims to have waved his gun around and stole cocaine from Ooze. So that's the starting test. And he's very clear that he relies on two facts and evidence, and that was, as I said before, the fact that there's a Walmart across the street from a Microtel near Fort Drum, and that a gun is found at his house. And he errs because, and as this court shows in Rounds, and I think Rounds is a rare example where we have two instances that this court can evaluate corroboration. Of course, at the Thanksgiving, it found insufficient corroboration, and for the New Year's Eve party, that it found adequate corroboration. And for those reasons, this is not the New Year's Eve party, because there you have two eyewitnesses who establish the felony at the scene he describes, at the time that he says he is there, in the company of other people who are known drug users, not just drug users, but cocaine. And there's cocaine, I think it was in the scene of active drug use. He was readily, he had readily access and opportunity to the very cocaine that he claims to have ingested. So once the scene is set, a fact finder can reasonably infer from that, without any knowledge, that there's a confession that the appellant used cocaine. And for that reason, the court found corroboration. If you compare that to the Thanksgiving party, you have the same eyewitnesses who say, I know these other people, I know that they've done drugs in the past, the appellant was there that night, he was there at the time that he said he was there, in the company of other people who were drug users, but the cocaine is absent. And so based on the independent evidence alone, without any knowledge of the confession, the fact finder cannot infer that the accused ingested cocaine.
Well, what about the weapon? I mean, they found a weapon that matched exactly the description that in the confession Adams said that he pulled out and waved around.
That's correct, Your Honor. And for that reason, the government says at trial, the gun corroborates everything. And the judge didn't find so.
Well, does it corroborate, at least in your view, the method of the crime?
It doesn't, Your Honor. And here's the reason why.
You said it does not?
It does not, Your Honor. It's not the method. The means, I think, is actually the Army Corps characterized it. The evidence at trial is a gun is found, a .40 caliber Smith & Wesson handgun is found at Specialist Adams' home. And that's it. You have to infer that because the weapon is found at his house, A, he owns it, which I think you can infer.
That's what we're looking at. We're looking at an inference of the truth of that essential fact. Doesn't have to prove it. It just has to be an inference.
That's correct, Your Honor. But those inferences still need to be grounded in fact.
Well, can't they be circumstantial?
It can. Yes, Your Honor. And that's why this court has found that that evidentiary standard is not only low, but even Melvin described it as very low. But it's still an inference that must come from a fact. And so the starting point is the independent evidence before the judge at the time that he makes it. So you have to infer then that because the weapon is found in his home, he therefore brought it with him that evening and used it in the commission of a larceny.
Well, can't you just infer that he owns the same type of weapon, and so that could be the same weapon? I mean, that's, he said, I pulled out this gun. I mean, can't there be an inference that that, in fact, was the gun that he was talking about?
Yes, Your Honor.
Anything more, not going beyond that, just for that one essential fact.
First of all, Your Honor, I don't think that is the essential fact. The essential fact is stealing cocaine. But you can infer from the evidence that he owns the weapon and that maybe that was the weapon that he had at the time. But it's a separate inference you have to draw that because the weapon is found, he used it in the commission of this crime. No other fact establishes this scene.
Well, back up a minute. You said the essential fact is stealing the cocaine. Give us what you think the essential facts of this confession were.
Your Honor, the appellant's confession, the narrative portion of it spans 9 lines. And the one phrase, one line that if you remove it, the rest of the statement cannot be read the same way, is Tuberville grabbed the coke and we got out of Ooze's car.
So
And the judge characterized that to me. I grabbed it.
How do you define essential fact?
A fact is essential to a confession.
Or is there, first, is there a legal definition? Or is this a case where we make it up and you make it up and we all decide?
Your Honor, I haven't found a case that defines what is an essential fact. I've looked to, of course, Opper and Smith. And the closest that this court has come to defining that is in Yauman and again in Rounds. Yauman looks to what the accused confesses to and then lays it out, 1, 2, and 3. And of course, in Rounds, the court says what the accused does not talk about gives an inference that it's not an essential fact because you're looking at it from his vantage, what is he trying to say?
Counsel, in your view, if we were to rule in favor of appellant, would we also need to overrule CA? Or can those, an opinion in favor of your, of the appellant, coexist with the current holding in CA?
Your Honor, I'm not going to say whether say was rightly or wrongly decided. I think the inference can be drawn that if the court takes it, because there's an inference drawn that the someone of that stature only carries a wallet because the body was found without it, we can infer that the accused absconded with it. If the court adopts the government's view in this case, this case may very well replace say as a new floor for corroboration.
Counsel, as I read the confession and as I read all of our former cases in this area, I come up with 6 essential facts. The place in Utz's car at a Microtel. Time after Burl, his friend, helped Adams move on February 28th. Accomplices, Tuberville and Anderson. Victim, Utz. Motive, revenge for ripping him off in a prior drug deal, and means or method, waving his handgun around while Tuberville grabbed the cocaine. But it seems to me that you're not recognizing those as essential facts. You're saying that it was just a process, stealing the cocaine. And I guess I want your reaction to the essential facts that I've identified and why they aren't essential facts.
Your Honor, this court may disagree with what the military judge found, but Ms. Shelton provides the job of the appellate court is to review for an abuse of discretion. And so we're supposed to look to what the judge did at the time that he made his ruling. And he's clear that he found but one essential fact. I believe it was in paragraph 8 of his oral ruling on the record. The appellate here admits.
Well, he found the essential fact, that essential fact was corroborated, but that doesn't mean that there were other essential facts in the confession that weren't corroborated. So I'm asking you, what are all of the essential facts in the confession?
Your Honor, in answering this question, I'm looking to Yauman and how Yauman picked apart the statement. And I think a good way of doing that would be to look at the temporal sequence of what he said. So perhaps one essential fact could be arriving at the Walmart, or I think the Microtel, and from there getting into car and going to Walmart, meeting Utz, and then the scene, the act of commission of the crime, pulling out the gun, stealing the cocaine, absconding with it, and then the other essential fact, of course, would be returning back to base. And the judge did find that as an essential fact, well, but then it wasn't corroborated. But the one essential fact that's of concern, it should be of concern to this court, is the one that the judge found, and that is the stealing of the cocaine. And without that essential fact, there's no way to not only read the confession the way that he made it, but also it wouldn't survive a factual legal sufficiency test.
You said that stated at the outset that the judge relied on the weapon and the location of the Walmart and Microtel for corroboration. What role, if any, did he rely on with respect to Utz? How does Utz play into all of this?
Your Honor, if I understand the first part of the question, you said the Army Court found that the judge relied on...
No, you stated at the outset, if I had heard you correctly, that there were two facts that the judge relied on to corroborate the confession.
Yes, sir, that essential fact of the confession.
Yeah. Oh, okay. To what extent did the judge rely on the correlation between Utz and Utz? And if he did rely on it, what can we infer from that?
Your Honor, he didn't rely on it. There was the evidence of Utz.
So the CCA relied on it, but the military judge did not?
Yes, Your Honor. That's precisely correct. There's evidence that Utz was a former soldier by Agent McKinney. Agent Villegas comes in and says he's a former soldier. Based on my review of reading CID cases, he was a reported drug dealer. Defense counsel objects to that.
Was there CID cases other than the statements in this case?
Say that again, Your Honor.
I said you said CID statements. Was it CID statements other than the statement in this case?
That's my read of what she's trying to say, Your Honor. But in any event, it's clear that it was hearsay within hearsay, and the judge has a duty to establish the reliability of the essential facts, and I think that means you also have to establish that the evidence is reliable. Hearsay is unreliable.
Well, there was no objection, was there?
Your Honor, I think there was an objection. The objection comes one question later, but the defense counsel stands up and says, Your Honor, she's not testifying from any of her personal knowledge. This is hearsay. The judge sustains and says, I'm only going to allow the portion about, are you familiar with the area around Fort Drum?
Well, this isn't the real question here, putting aside the hearsay, whether or not that statement was independent and not derived from Adams' confession. And the government, as I understand it, has the burden of establishing that. And you just referred to a statement. Do you feel that the government has satisfied that burden?
I don't, Your Honor.
And why?
And if I understand your question, you're saying the government has a duty to...
The government has a duty to establish that the corroborating evidence is evidence that is independent of the confession and not... It both independent and not derived from.
Yes, Your Honor. And that the evidence about her part of the testimony, this is the person who was reported to have been robbed, clearly is coming from the confession. Her evidence, her testimony about the accused, or I'm sorry, about Utz being a former drug dealer is deriving from CID records. It's independent of the confession, but the other corollary of that independent evidence is it must be reliable. Admissible evidence, as this case saw.
Counsel, the way that I'm hearing you explain what's required to corroborate a confession in this case is almost independent proofs such that you don't need a confession at all. I mean, is that the purpose of this rule?
No, Your Honor. And this court has long since departed from the corpus delicti rule. I see that my time is...
Please answer the question. Thank you.
This court has long demanded the corpus delicti rule, and you don't need the evidence to support a conviction beyond a reasonable doubt, but you still need to have enough independent evidence that allows a fact finder with no knowledge that confession exists to be able to infer that not just any crime occurred, but the crime articulated by the essential facts occurred. And again, if you look to Cottrell, you have evidence that a girl says, my daddy touches my vagina, he touches in a way that it hurts, and a doctor comes in and says, I found an unnatural opening in the hymen, and in my medical expert opinion that came in at trial, that's evidence of sexual abuse. This court looked at the independent evidence and says, from this, we can deduce that that girl suffered sexual injury at the hands of her father. Turning then to the confession, the court says, and we see here that the accused is confessing to sexual abuse of his child. That is sufficient evidence to corroborate the essential fact that sexual injury was visited upon by the father.
Chief. Mm-hmm. Questions. Counsel, I'd like to turn your attention to JA 72. It's when trial counsel is questioning Agent Villegas, and Agent Villegas says he, referring to Utz, is the individual that was reported to have been robbed. You seem to have placed great emphasis in answering the Chief Judge's question about the need to prove it's cocaine. Let's assume, arguendo, that that came from an independent source. Was the fact that Villegas did not say that was robbed of cocaine mean that an essential fact was not proven in your mind?
Your Honor, if the court, the military judge, considered this evidence and it's before the judge today, or the court today, let's consider that against the test. There is a gun found in Special Saddle's home. There's a Walmart across the street from my hotel near Fort Drum. And there's a former soldier named Bruce who was reported to be a drug dealer. What crime occurred? The fact finder would say, oh, the appellant must have stole cocaine from him. Could easily be inferred. Maybe they robbed Walmart together. So even if the evidence comes in, it's still not enough.
So you're saying, I'm not quite clear what you just said. Are you saying that it would or would not be sufficient if this information had come from an independent source for Villegas to say that he had been robbed without saying robbed of cocaine?
Your Honor, in that circumstance, it may be closer. It needs to be, it would be if it were independent, but you still have to take it back to that threshold. And the fact finder, having no knowledge of the confession, if they can read all of that evidence, reported to have been robbed, even if reported to have been robbed by cocaine, if you can infer from that and the other two pieces of evidence that the appellant robbed him of the cocaine, then you have corroboration. But I don't think you can do that here.
So a completely different question, but based on this same issue, is it's your position, obviously, that the government bears the burden to prove this. But what's the interplay between the burden being on the government to prove it and abuse of discretion by the military judge in making the finding?
Your Honor, the government, the judge abuses discretion in one of three ways. Either his findings of fact are erroneous, here they, I don't think that they were, or that his...
So you said the military judge's findings were not erroneous?
No, neither. The findings of fact, meaning that these two pieces of evidence are independent evidence. The judge can abuse his discretion if he doesn't identify the essential facts. And where the judge does err here is the application of the two. I find as a conclusion of law that the independent evidence produced at trial that I've considered adequately corroborates the essential fact in this case. That is how he abuses discretion.
Okay. Thank you, counsel. Counsel of the government, please.
Yes, Your Honor. Chief Judge Baker, members of the court, may it please the court. My name is Captain Jacqueline Shea, and along with Major John Choike, we represent the government. I ask this court to come to the following three conclusions. One, the military judge did not abuse his discretion because the independent evidence shows that appellant's confession is reliable and that a crime was committed. Two, even if you find the fact that appellant took cocaine is an essential fact, reasonable inferences from the independent evidence sufficiently corroborated. And three, additionally, like the Army Corps, the military judge considered the fact that Oop's name is uncommon and unique, and the fact that he was a known drug dealer in the area.
The military judge considered that, or the CCA considered that?
The military judge, Your Honor.
Yeah. Where does that reflect? Sorry.
No, I'll go ahead.
We're tag team here.
Yes, Your Honor. Your Honor, the military judge in his ruling cites on page 89 and 90 of the Joint Appendix Grant and Melbourne. And he also refers to Oop's name twice in that ruling. Now, the court in Grant discusses the case in Melvin. And Melvin, in this case, is similar to the present case because it involves a known drug dealer by the name of Oates.
Where did the military judge say that Oates was an unusual name and he was a known drug dealer?
He did not, Your Honor, specifically say that in his ruling, but that inference can be drawn by the cases that he cited. Additionally, Your Honor, the military judge is required to show his work.
Why is it important to you that he did or he didn't, since the CCA did?
Well, Your Honor, I don't think it's necessary for you to actually find that, because even the Army Corps, under its Article 66 power, a fine fact in the families, can consider that fact, which is on the record. So if you find that he did err, the military judge did not specifically say he relied on that fact, it would still be harmless beyond a reasonable doubt to consider that fact. Your Honors, appellant argues that his confession lacked corroboration of two essential facts, that the cocaine existed and...
First of all, how do you define essential fact? How should we define it, etc.?
Yes, Your Honor. Under the case law, it is a little ambiguous what the definition of essential facts is, but I would ask this court that it should be that independent evidence must touch on the who, the what, the where, the why, or how a charged offense to implicate the accused to show that a crime has been committed. Again, this is a low standard, and the focus is on the reliability of the confession. Appellant argues that evidence must support each separate fact or some certain facts. The appellant here is asking this court to reinstate the elements test. Independent evidence is no longer required to corroborate all of the elements of offense or to establish the corpus delicti. The purpose of MRE 304G and the focus should be on the reliability and trustworthiness of his confession. The military courts have described the amount of corroboration as slight, very slight, and very low.
But 304G1 says that the evidence must be sufficient to raise inference of the truth of the essential facts admitted. So if you just look at the language, it seems that the essential, first you have to identify the essential facts in the confession, and then you have to see whether or not the corroboration evidence corroborates those and raises an inference.
I agree, Your Honor, but if you look specifically at the purpose of the rule,
The purpose of the rule is one thing, but this is how you implement the rule, it seems to me.
Well, Your Honor, in this court has found in say that the corroboration of the existence of the stolen item in the actual taking is not required. His confession was reasonably corroborated based on reasonable inferences.
Well, counsel, so in this case, let's assume that the fact that it was cocaine or some drug is an essential fact. Right? I'm not asking to admit that, but let's say it is. Do you think that it's reasonable to say that the fact that Boots was a known drug dealer is a circumstantial evidence to support the inference of the truth of that part of his confession? Do you understand what I'm saying? It's like when the appellant was talking, it seemed as though they thought you had to have specific direct evidence tied to every fact in the confession. And that's not, it appears to me, what the rule requires.
Yes, Your Honor, and I think that a drug dealer in the local area allows for that greater inference. From Browns and even Melvin, this court has found that the presence of drugs in its users is different than whether the presence of drugs from a drug dealer. And the uniqueness of the name, Oot, a known drug dealer, meets that detail of the incident as reflected in his confession. And that is quality evidence of cooperation consistent with Browns. Also, Your Honor, in Melvin, the known drug dealer by the name of Doodoo, it's not a coincidence here. The military judge clearly relied on that fact and to show that the uniqueness of the name was considered in this case.
I'd like to look at the independent evidence that supports the identification by the two CID agents as to Oots being a known drug dealer in the local area. Now, McKinney never testified to that at all. McKinney only testified that he was a prior soldier. And that's not a corroborating fact here, because that fact, that he was a former soldier, is not in the confession. So that doesn't play into it at all. And so when you look at Villegas' testimony, and we find that on JA-72, I think. And in your brief, you categorize that or represent that to say that she didn't look at the confession and that she obtained it, I believe, from looking through these cases at CID. But what, in fact, she testified to was that she had not heard of Hoops prior to the day that the search warrant was executed. She didn't talk to Tuberville, and she didn't interview Adams. So what I need to know from you is, where did she get the information to look through the files for something about Oots? And, you know, there's certainly no testimony that McKinney told her. And so I'm just trying to figure out where that independent evidence comes from that wasn't contained in Adams' confession.
Yes, Your Honor. I believe the other agents did identify when they were asked about Oots and his name, whether you knew his full name, and it was clear that the other agents didn't know of Matthew Oots.
Well, McKinney testified that his name was Timothy Oots, and Villegas testified that his name was Matthew Oots, both spelled differently. That doesn't seem to be a very good identification to me.
Well, the uniqueness, Your Honor, of the name and the fact that it was brought up that he was a former soldier in the military is quite common to be called by a last name. Whether this was even his actual last name doesn't matter, because the military judge in this case made that exceptions and substitutions and found Oots rather than Matthew Oots in this case.
Well, once a confession is challenged, it's the government's burden to establish that the corroboration is good. And what I'm looking for and having trouble finding is that the government established that the testimony of Villegas, however you pronounce that, was independent from the confession. And that was the burden, and I'm having trouble in finding that. And I'm just asking if you can point me to where that is, I'd appreciate it.
Yes, Your Honor. Well, you are bringing up to the joint appendix portion of the 72 and 73, those pages. And in those pages, she does report that he was a drug dealer in the local area.
But where does she get that information? That's what I'm asking.
From looking through the open CID case files, she says, without looking to the actual confession.
And why was she looking at the CID files for somebody named Utz?
It's not clear on the record, Your Honor, where she was looking for that. But the inference is that the other CID agents, by misstating his name, did have knowledge of Utz. But the other CID agents testifying in this case, by the one you said, Your Honor, that he...
She testified.
Yes, Your Honor. At the Joint Appendix 72, they identify the CID agent says Utz as Matthew Utz, and they were asked, do you know this full name? And he said Matthew Utz. And then he was asked again on Joint Appendix 55. He was mistakenly identified as Timothy. And the CID agent then refers to the victim as Utz again on the record on page 23. It's not in the Joint Appendix.
Okay, and we shouldn't give too much credence to the fact that they're identifying people by different names, Matthew Utz and Timothy Utz, and
no, Your Honor.
The spelling's different.
No, Your Honor, because again, in the attempted substitutions by the military judge, he found the name to be Utz, similar to what was the confession.
Okay. Now, what is corroborating about the fact that the Walmart and the Mike Patel are in close proximity to one another? What exactly does that corroborate as far as the essential facts of the confession are concerned?
The location, Your Honor. It is statement, appellant statement, he says they met at the Walmart and they drove to the Mike Patel. Looking at the independent evidence is that exists within close proximity to each other, the Walmart and the Mike Patel.
Well, what if it was 20 miles away? Does that have any relevance as to corroborating an essential fact in the crime? I mean, if he said we drove from one to another, they could have driven 50 miles.
Again, Your Honor, the standard is that the corroborating evidence must raise only an inference of truth as to the essential facts admitted. That's not the only essential fact that we have. That's not the only corroboration we have in this case. We have not only the location of the Walmart and the Microtel, but we have the theft of the Smith & Wesson 40 cal, which he said in his statement. And then he also said in his statement that he brought that weapon back to his residence in his pants. 4 days after the crime, the independent evidence is found.
Well, he brought the weapon back to the base in his pants, and it was found in his home off base. Wasn't that correct?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
But I do have a record site of Joint Appendix 92 on that. The other independent evidence we have is that he was robbed by a drug dealer named Utz, he said in his statement, and the independent evidence is that Utz is a former soldier and a drug dealer in the local area. We also have in his statement, he said his accomplices used and stole the cocaine. And the independence is that no cocaine was actually found in that search 4 days later. Cocaine is a perishable property, and 4 days after the crime, it's not reasonable to have that cocaine exist. Additionally, it corroborates
But is that corroborating evidence? I mean, the lack of finding the evidence, to me, I mean, it's obvious that it's perishable evidence, and that explains why they may not have been able to find it, but it doesn't corroborate the fact that the cocaine was stolen.
Well, Your Honor, it's also consistent with what the appellant said in this case. So the appellant said that cocaine was used and taken by his accomplice. So if the search happened and there was cocaine that was found, that would be inconsistent with his confession. The independent evidence here shows that a crime was committed and it also touched the gravamen of the offense. The government was able to corroborate with independence the who, Utz, the victim, the how, the Smith & Wesson 40 cal, the means of the theft, and the where, all provided by the appellant to show that a criminal act has occurred. The loaded weapon found in the appellant's house soon after the crime also implicates the appellant in this case to show that a crime was committed. And like Grant and Melvin, CID testimony of what they found in the search 4 days after the crime corroborated appellant's confession, strongly creating an issue of truth.
Did the evidence corroborate the what of the crime?
No, Your Honor. Not directly. And that
it
is
can
not
be circumstantial as well, so it is noticeable, though, that you go through your who, what, when, blah, 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 and you didn't leave, you left out the what. Does that mean the piece about Coke and the confession should have come in or should not have come in?
Well, Your Honor, the inference that we asked this court to make is, well, in his confession, he said he was robbed by the drug dealer. And that independent evidence is that there is a former soldier named Boots in the area. And the inference we asked to make is that that is that same Boots. That is the victim of this crime. And the other...
No, I get all that. It's just the only question this is all about. The military judge was careful to go through and delete certain things. Should he have deleted the bit about Tuberville grabbed the Coke?
No, Your Honor. And that's because a drug dealer allows for that greater inference that there is presence of drugs, as from Rounds and Melvin. And also in this court in Say has found that not every independent evidence requires evidence. Reasonable inferences can substitute.
Okay, thank you.
Even in Say, the divided court, it seems to show that that case is at the lower limit of sufficiency. However, comparing that case to this case, the present case, to Say, there is more corroboration than the barest list of possibility. Say does not have to be overruled in this case. Additionally, there is reasonable inferences are made from independent evidence itself rather than relying on inferences as independent evidence. Any further questions?
There are no further questions. Thank you. Counsel for the appellant, please.
Thank you, Chief Judge Baker. I'd like to make 2 points. The first, I'd like to respond to your question, Chief Judge Baker. You asked, is it sufficient if the policies to establish the reliability of the essential facts? Is it enough if we can't prove each and every essential fact? And that policy comes to us from Smith, and that policy is, in fact, true. But in light of that decision, the president promulgated 304G. So that policy informs the rule, but when we are faced with the plain meaning of the rule, there's a procedure that each essential fact must have independent evidence corroborating it, and for any essential fact not corroborated, the trier or the military judge should excise that statement. And that's what we have here. So it is more of a mechanical approach. And the second point is I'd like to address the flaw in the government's argument. And the government is saying we've established the means by which the crime has occurred, we established the location of the situs of the crime, and we've established the identity of the victim, therefore the statement is corroborated. The problem with that reasoning is, and we'll start with the location, the independent evidence of trial is there was a Walmart across the street from a microtower. No fact finder could infer that that's a situs of the crime unless you look to the confession. So you're drawing an inference from the confession, you're using the confession to contextualize and make these facts relevant. And that's not what the law requires, or not the law allows. Likewise, the means by which the crime is committed, the evidence at trial is only a gun is found in his house. You have to infer not only that he owns the gun, you're not going to infer that, but infer that he brought the gun with him that night, and that he used the gun to commit the larceny. Likewise, the evidence of Boots as a former soldier who deals drugs, you have to infer that he, by drugs, would mean cocaine, and that he brought cocaine with him that night to the scene, and that...
What do you think corroborated means?
Your Honor, I think there's 3 facts missing from this case.
No, I mean, I'm just asking you, what is your definition of corroborated?
The evidence, my definition of what would be required to corroborate...
How do you define it?
The word.
Makes true. And so, because the government's argument of relying and using the confession is using those inferences to supplement the true meaning, which is you have to look to the independent evidence. As Judge Irvin notes, the corroboration rule requires independent evidence upon which inferences may be drawn, not inferences that substitute for evidence. Any questions?
There are no further questions. Okay, thank you, counsel. The court thanks both counsel, and the case is submitted. And we'll stand in recess until further order of the court. Thank you very much.
stands adjourned until further order of the court.